Welcome. Thank you all so much for coming. It's always so reassuring when you're up here to see some friends show up. And welcome to the Zendo. Make yourselves comfortable. Tonight, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite stories. And maybe some of you have heard it before. I think it's one of those stories you can study forever and always find things in it. It's from the Gateless Barrier, the Mumon Khan, and it's the story of Baijong and the fox. It's a story about being human and about learning and about mistakes and about consequences and, you know, what does all that matter anyhow? And I think the way that I want to approach it is I want to tell the story in a few chunks, like tell one, the first part, and then stop and look at it together. I'm just curious, has anybody here ever not studied any Zen stories? It's really okay to raise your hand if you haven't really studied Zen stories very much. So everybody else has taken a crack at it. Well, I think it's really important to just recognize when we think about studying these stories that they seem like stories from long ago and like, you know, these guys in China a long time ago, but it's really us. And every single element in the story is us. So that's why I want to stop frequently and look at it together from the perspective of what's really going on, and trying to understand together what is this about the story. So Baijong was this great teacher, and he gave Dharma talks, and he would notice that when he gave these Dharma talks, there was this old man who would always come and sit in the back of the room. How many of us have been that old man? We come and we kind of sit in the back of the room, you know. Oh, I'm not going to draw any attention to myself. I'm just going to kind of slip in and slip out. But one day, the old man didn't leave. He came forward. And so Baijong said, as a good Zen teacher would say in such a circumstance, "Who are you?" You know, who are you? And the old man said, "Well, I'm not a person, actually. I'm a fox. Many, 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 many years ago, before even the time of Buddha, I was a great teacher. And I was sitting in the teaching seat, and a student asked me a question. And the student asked me, does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect?" And I said, "No, such a person does not fall under the laws of cause and effect." Whereby I was turned into a fox, and I've lived 500 lifetimes in this fox body. And I, please, please liberate me from this body, from this fox body. I ask from you, you know, a turning word so that I can be free. So let's stop there first. And let's kind of look at this a little bit together. Okay, so it seems like he made a mistake in his answer, because he was turned into a fox, right? And a fox in Chinese mythology is like, you know, tricky, wicked. One of the books I read said it's like the witch's black cat, you know, and people make shrines to foxes to, you know, leave me alone, just leave me alone. And thank you very much, fox. So, you know, doesn't seem like it's a good thing to be turned into a fox. So what was his mistake that he made? Well, what was it that was asked of him? Does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect? So what's he asking there? And I warn you, with this story, it sounds like you have it all figured out, and then it changes. So let's pretend we can understand this first part. Does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect? Well, let's see. I think that would mean an enlightened person, right, is one who sees the interconnection of life and sees the non-dualistic absolute, the truth of the absolute, that in reality, it's just like a bunch of spinning molecules of energy, and there's no cause and no effect. It's all just moving and happening in the moment. So, no, of course, an enlightened person who sees that and understands that, they're not subject to these mundane laws of cause and effect, right? Well, that's what he thought. And dang, turned him into a fox. So he said, please, you know, please free me from my fox body. So he thought he'd try again. So he asked Baijong 500 lifetimes later. He says, so please tell me, does an enlightened person fall under the laws of cause and effect? And Baijong said, such a person does not ignore the laws of cause and effect. Whereupon the old man was liberated from his fox body. He was free. Whoa, so that must have been the right answer. What is that about? An enlightened person does not ignore the laws of cause and effect. Okay, so that seems to be saying, okay, you know, I can have the understanding of the absolute nature of life. It's all a bunch of spinning molecules of energy, but I'm still going to walk through the door rather than the wall. There is a distinction here. It is all spinning energy and atoms. If you try to go into the core of the atom, you won't find anything there. That is true. And I don't ignore that there is cause and effect. There are doors and walls. So it seems here he's saying that the liberating function is to recognize that and to not ignore that. What would that look like, not ignoring the laws of cause and effect? I think that would be to really study your delusion, to really know that, you know, we're all going to be, well, here's a comment. A lot of people have commentaries on this. So one commentary from Sekida. I have the names if anybody's interested in who these people were, but a person whose name was Sekida is his last name. He says, because thoughts inevitably occur, they leave their traces in the subconscious. Hence, karmic causation must occur. To ignore causation compounds one's malady. I think that's pretty good. Yeah, thoughts happen and they have their effect. And so I don't want to ignore the fact that, for example, there's a lot I don't know. There's a lot I'm unconscious about. And even if I try to be this, you know, enlightened person, I'm still going to be bumping up against things and I'm going to be making mistakes, you know. My unconscious stuff is going to be banging into your unconscious stuff. So I don't want to ignore that and somehow pretend that I'm above that, because I also can recognize the absolute nature of reality. Cleary, in another commentary, he says, a very common mistake is to mistake ignorance for transcendence. See, I think this is another challenge, you know, to those of us who would, you know, or to those, yeah, who would claim or aspire to enlightenment, is don't be too proud, you know. What you don't know, be humble, you know, about what we don't know. He says, Zen practice does not exempt us from what is actually happening. It frees us to see what is really happening. So story's over, right? He got the right answer. He was freed from his fox body, and they lived happily ever after. No, the story goes on. There's more. Okay, what more could possibly happen? Well, so he was liberated from his fox body, and then he made an interesting request to Baijiang. He said, would you please bury my fox body with the same reverence? I would like a priest's burial service for my fox body. And Baijiang said, yeah, okay. So he had one of his monks ring the han, the striker, the striker that we use to call people to service, and set up for a funeral service. And the monks were like, who died? You know, they looked around. Nobody had died. Nobody was in the hospital. They didn't get it, but okay, we're going to have a funeral. And Baijiang led them out to the mountains and poked the rocks with his stick and picked up the body of a dead fox and led an honorable cremation and burial ceremony for this fox body. And then they came back to the Zendo, or to the place, the Dharma Hall, and he told the monks the story about the old man and how he had come and how he was really a fox and he had become liberated and he had asked for this and so he had accepted and they had buried him. And there you have it. Well, Huang Biao, hi Tristan, Huang Biao was one of Baijiang's top students. They said he was 7 feet tall, big, deep voice. So Huang Biao called out upon hearing this story. As you say, the old man missed the turning word and he was born as a fox 500 times. What if he had given the right answer? What would have happened then? And now I'm going to tell you this part where if you're new to Zen stories, you'll think this totally doesn't make sense, but I'm going to say it anyhow, and then we can look at it. Well, he says, okay, you know, what if he had given the right answer? What would have happened then? Well, Baijiang laughed. He liked that. He says, come closer. And so Huang Biao approached him and slapped his teacher. And his teacher really liked that. He said, this is the big Zen joke. I thought that the barbarian had a red beard, but here I see a red-bearded barbarian. And they laughed and, you know, it's like, okay. The first time I heard this story, I thought, now what does that mean? I totally don't get it. And that's actually the end of the story. And then there's a verse and a commentary. So that was really anticlimactic the first time I heard it, because I thought, okay, you know, up until then, I'm kind of following along, but this Huang Biao and the slap and the barbarian beard, ugh, okay. But I went back and I studied it this time, and a lot opened up. So just at the technical level, and you know what? As usual, I forgot to bring a clock. So can you signal me, Edie, when it's about, what time is it now?
It's 5 to 8.
Okay. Let me know when it's about, like, 10 to 15 after. Thank you. So the red-bearded barbarian, what that makes reference to is Bodhidharma, who brought Buddha's teaching, the Zen teaching, from India to China. And apparently the Chinese thought that people from India were, pretty much anybody who wasn't from China was a barbarian. And so the Indians were barbarians. But here was the founder of Buddhism, Shakyamuni Buddha, and Bodhidharma, the sacred ancestor, who were both from India. So they used the term barbarian kind of affectionately and reverentially. So the red-bearded barbarian basically is, you know, a Zen person. So what Baijong was saying to his student was basically, whoa, you are a Zen master. You know? Now, why would he think that when his student comes up and slaps him? Oh, watch out, you know? Well, again, different commentators have their turn on this, but, you know, essentially what Huang Wo was doing was transcending the duality of the construct of the story, which it seems like it's set up like, oh, right, wrong answer, you turn into a fox. Right answer, you get liberated from being a fox. And Huang Bo is saying, well, what if he'd given the right answer? Then what would have happened? What would have happened? His whole life wouldn't have happened. His 500 fox lives wouldn't have happened. So was it a mistake or was it just what happened? I mean, what's wrong with being a fox? What's wrong with being a fox? So what? He was a fox for 500 years, you know? It's not right and it's not wrong. You know, I think Huang Bo is pointing towards that. He's saying, you know, what would have happened if something different would have happened? Well, it couldn't have. The only thing that could have happened is he did what he did. And then when he was ready, after, you know, 500 lives as a fox and after all these Dharma talks that he just sat in the back, when he was ready, you know, he stepped up and he said, you know, hi, I have a question. I'm here. Exactly. And then who are you? Well, actually, I'm a fox, you know. I have so much affection for this story. I don't know about you, but, you know, when I first heard it, I thought it was very weird. But when I really, really started to think about the sweetness of this concept of burying the fox body with the reverence that you would have, you know, for a priest, that to me, that's like, oh, that's like treating, you know, okay, so say it was a mistake. Well, that's like treating your mistake with reverence. Oh, you know, what part of you is a fox body? Do you treat that part with reverence? You know, when it's alive and then when it dies, you know, do you? Oh, let's treat it with reverence. It's not just this like carcass in the mountain. You know, this is our sacred fox body. The verse is really interesting because the verse is this. This is then the comment of the person who organized these stories. He says, not falling, why should this prompt 500 lives as a fox? Not ignoring, why would this prompt a return to human life? If you have the single eye of realization, you will appreciate how old Baijong lived 500 lives as a fox as lives of grace. Not falling, not evading, two faces of the same die, not ending, not falling, 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes. You know, how generous this is as a teaching. The faith in the potential of our ability to grow and learn. And there's nothing wrong with where you are in the process. There's no ultimate place to get. Cleary, beautiful commentaries on this. He calls it plunging into bondage as an act of freedom. You know, he says the single eye of realization, the dualistic eye here would be saying, oh, the foxy old man was too attached to liberation and he fell into bondage. But the single eye of non-dualistic understanding is he called it artful and creative participation in the world. I mean, this is our real life, is artful and creative participation in the world. And then Cleary goes on to say, the ordinary world is ongoing, and since nothing is fixed, there is always potential for creativity in the process of change. Nothing is ever perfect, but with awareness and autonomy, one uses imperfect expedients to deal with imperfect situations. So I was thinking about this story, of course, a lot the last few weeks, thinking, you know, preparing for this talk and talking with various ones of you hither and yon about some of these ideas. And then I had this experience last night where I really kind of got to put it to the test. I had a really bad night. I had a really hard experience in a group that I was facilitating. Hannah, I know you're in the practice period discussion. Well, I had, and Harry, right, too. I had talked about the first meeting of this group where I had gone with the bodhisattva intention, right? And I had done this lovely little, like, Dharma talk intention setting. And we had this really great meeting, right? So everybody's like, oh, good outcome. Well, last night, you know, last night, basically, I realized after the fact that the whole situation of this group, it's a group that is having to do an impossible job, basically, of cutting millions of dollars from a system where already a lot has been cut and there's going to be no winners, no matter what happens. And I realized, oh, this is a complete karmic circumstance here. This is so beyond any of us as individuals who could really do anything that would completely impact the situation, because it's a system that's nested within the bigger system of the state of California that's nested within the United States. So it's like lots of karmic, you know, energy that brought us to where we were. But anyhow, so I did something in my role that I feel was completely appropriate, but the person was kind of the, I don't want to imagine, the object. See, she perceived that she was the object of a correction on my part. She was really, 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 really upset about that. So when I'm driving down to my hotel yesterday, I'm like, oh, I feel like a fox. Did I make a mistake? Did I make a mistake? Was the right answer the first meeting where I was this lovely, enlightened, you know, calm person and everybody was happy? And then last night when we struggled and it was hard and I, you know, took an arrow, you know, was that bad? Was that a mistake? I just did what I did. Right. I did what I did. And so, you know, then I look at, well, then, and this is something I know I've been kind of coming and asking Kokyo about a lot, like, where's the liberation? You know, where's my freedom? Where is it? I want it. You know? And I know in, I think it was in class on Sunday, you know, we were talking about the idea of the very place where we have the problem, the very place where we grasp, that is the very place where the liberation is, right? Because otherwise it's just theory. It's just conjecture. You know, it's this hypothetical transcendent story. But where we're actually grasping and suffering, that is the place of liberation. So I wrote myself some little notes, kind of like, well, what in this case? You know, I figure if I can't apply these cases to my life, then why should I study them? That's just how I am. So I don't know yet. Maybe you can help me study this case. Um, you know, not ignoring karma. I mean, I did go out and apologize to her. However, I didn't try to explain or rationalize it. I didn't try to make myself right, even though I thought I was right. I just let it go. So I did acknowledge that it had happened. You know, I apologize. It was not my intention for you to feel, you know, singled out. That was not my intention. And I apologize for that. You know, and yet, then I, you know, could have gotten all caught up in the story of trying to, you know, fix it. And it was unfixable. It happened. That's karma. You know, it happened. And in fact, I even used the term cause and effect with her. You know, it was kind of like, well, thank you for your apology, you know, she said, but, you know, the deed is done. You know, and then now she has her karma. She's a person that likes to affix a lot of meaning to things that happen and remember things that happened, and then this means that, and this means that, and it's like, I can't do anything about that. There's nothing that I could do. Just stand in my, you know, my fox body. And then I had this feeling of, oh, maybe she's a fox too. Maybe we're just foxes, you know. You know, sniffing each other out. I mean, you know, one of my downfalls, I think, is, and one of my causes of suffering, one of my sources of suffering, is I always want everybody to be happy. I really, really do. I am so happy when others are happy. You know, when I get to really feel that, the joy and the flow of functioning humanity, it's like my highest pleasure. And when it's not happening, of course, I want to try to make it happen. And sometimes, you know, I do try to bring joy to situations, but it's a completely impossible task to think that everybody's going to be happy. So am I doomed, you know, to eternal suffering? Well, you know, frankly, I mean, I'm looking at, as long as I'm holding on to that expectation of how it's supposed to be, yeah, I am going to suffer, because it's just not going to be that way. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Reverend, for once again reminding me and us of what liberation looks like. That's it. That's what happened. On we go. Take the next breath. If there's something to clean it up and keep going. Now what? You know, what's my intention? What's your intention? What's our intention? And what does that look like now?
Yeah, so intention has a lot to do with it. You know, if I'm in a conversation in which I'm being purposefully cruel, that's very different than if I make a mistake. That's just a choice of words. What about the role of intention?
Yeah, but I would say even being intentionally cruel, there's room I know we get into these discussions about this. It's not that it excuses it. But again, you know, the extent of our ignorance and is vast. And our ability to be triggered by one another and to cling to our fixed notions of one another is vast, you know. And so even that, I would say, even that, even if I'm being intentionally cruel, is there some opportunity for liberation there as well? And it's hard. This is where it gets hard to really think about this stuff. And where we get caught, I think, by these notions of absolute and relative, you know. I think for me, why the whole thing of the ritual of burying the fox body is just so beautiful, because it's very physical, you know. And I think sometimes those are the times with each other when we can be the most helpful, is when we just get grounded in, you know, the physical together, like when we do ceremony, for example, or when we work together. I mean, I think it's no accident that he asked for ceremony as a way to express, you know, the non-duality in an actual, not a theoretical way. That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. So I don't really have anything else to say at the moment. I would love to hear. Thank you for opening up. And is it totally at the end, or is it?
No, it's almost 8:15.
Oh, okay, good. So if others have anything that you would like to ask or say, yeah, Edie.
The story, and I heard it a long time ago and had forgotten it. I heard that within the story, at each turn of the story, it was enacting cause and effect just by the turn of the story. So there was like nothing hidden. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a classic Zen teaching structure. You know, first there's a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. I mean, and Dogen does this all the time. You know, this is true, and that is true, and both are true, and neither are true. You know, and if that doesn't drive you out the door, then you become a fan, and you know, you say, oh, that makes perfect sense. But yeah, I think that's a good observation. I think that is one of the opportunities of the story, is to just kind of look at each turning, because again, both are true. I mean, that's not just an annoying Zen, you know, saying. It actually is true that Buddha nature is steady and serene and does not come and go, and that everything depends on everything else. You know, it's like the wave and the particle in physics, where, you know, you really can look at the world as a particle or look at the world as a wave. And depending on where you're looking, yeah, it is true when you're over here that that is the explanation. But it's not the complete explanation, because this is also true. So how do you rectify this seeming contradiction? That's our practice. Yeah.
When you started the talk, you said that, you know, the telling story and the word human, about what it is to be human. And what really moved me about the way you told the story, and that I've heard the story, you know, lots of times, but somehow it hadn't come home to me this way. That quality of reverencing
the fox, that the old man becoming human again had, that tenderness towards the supposed mistakenness of himself as the fox self for all that time. That to me is the quality of being human, and that, you know, and that seems to be our way. And that's our way. And that, in that, there's no, it doesn't seem, I mean, the whole thing about dualities and a lot just melts, because it's that compassion that is towards the supposedly, you know, lesser self, or the self that's stumbled, or the,
yeah.
And we all have that sense of ourselves at various moments, and how to, I find that the most challenging and also just transforming part of practice for me, is finding a way to be that gentle with just this person. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Beautiful teacher.
Yeah.
I'll find that question. I think if I was making my many mistakes in a vacuum, I probably wouldn't worry about them so much. But when I see the effects of my mistakes ripple out into my circle of people, my students, my loved ones, it pains me so deeply. That, as you know, my tendency is to withdraw and become so small, I guess, that no mistake is possible, because there's that reach is not very far.
Yeah, I think that's very normal. I mean, I feel the same way. Like, my response to last night was, oh, I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to quit. You know, I can't do this. I don't want to have to deal with this. This is too much. You know, I don't want to be here. I want it to be different. I want it to be nice, and it's not. So I'm out of here. But what are you going to do? You know? I mean, you know, you can reduce your challenges to such that you're just, you know, functioning on a very, very small little patch of the earth to try to avoid the impact of your action. I guess you can do that. You know, I have the fantasy about the, you know, the little cabin where I can just go and just be with the foxes and, you know, not have to deal with people. Me, can you imagine like what that idea?
there's also an impulse to show up.
Right.
And like,
yeah.
The old man.
Yep. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? There you are. You do what you do. Yeah.
And all that, at some level, are you selling to other people short?
How so?
They can't handle this. It's hurting them. And you don't know what it means to them. It might be some person that you affected, what you would perceive to be negatively, and it might be a wake-up 2 weeks down the road.
Yeah.
They're eating a Cheerio.
Right, and I think that is recognizing that we do exist in this bigger, you know, kind of interdependent, there's something beyond just the moment of this fixed, you know, exchange that we're having where we think we understand it. And I think that's where faith and trust come in, you know, and thank you, yeah, because that's really like, okay, this isn't really about me. Can I let go of this self-concern that this is about me and my comfort or my worry about others? Can I just, you know, trust that, you know, who knows where ultimately? I will never know. We will never know. And so just that faith and trust in the big, you know, mind, the big purpose. I mean, I think ultimately that helps us dust ourselves off and get back on the horse, you know, as they say. Because what are you going to do? Like, otherwise you're going to stay there paralyzed and I don't want to do anything because I'm going to make somebody mad. Well, then we don't get to live our lives. Then we don't live a full life. We live a reduced life. Yeah.
And in a sense, that's cheating those other people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Here.
To me, one of the great joys of this, of the teaching, is this, you know, this moment is exactly what it is. And it can't be any different at all.
Yeah.
It's just exactly what it is. And suffering occurs when you start getting into if-thens. If I had, then this moment would be different.
Yeah.
And that's suffering.
Yeah.
And so if you can just accept that this moment is exactly what this moment is, then you can perhaps make plans for the next moment, or, you know, 64 moments to the second. You have to go out quite a ways there, and, you know, maybe you can do something a little different at the next meeting, but you don't really have to worry about the last meeting because there's nothing you can do about it. And Dogen says at some point that we can change the past, and I think this is very true. At some moment when this plays itself out, how you perceive that meeting may be very different.
Yeah.
You know, so, but to me, just, you know, this moment, the next moment, the next moment, some planning, so, you know, learning from some mistakes, but, you know, we can only do so much, and, you know, no matter how much you plan, what's that statement? Something like, reality is what happens to you mm-hmm. while you're busy making plans, you know. Mm-hmm. You just can't work too much
yeah.
for that one, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and that whole, you know, tendency of we want to try to save each other from difficulty. And, you know, sometimes growth. I mean, like when I think about this particular situation, there is no way that there can't be difficulty in this situation. And in a way, it would be like totally unreal for us to fantasize that we could get through these series of meetings and not have suffering, because the whole situation is such, you know. And so knowing that, you know, what can I, you know, what joy can I bring? Even so, even in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little switching from what you said.
I have to make a distinction between pain and suffering. That, you know, you can't get through this situation without pain, because you're going to be making painful decisions and people are going to be hurt and it's going to hurt. But, you know, suffering is getting into this thing of, you know, Proposition 13 hadn't passed.
Very good example.
If we had the kind of tax base that died in suburban New York.
Right, then we wouldn't be here.
You know,
right.
They'd be teaching six languages and, you know, everybody'd be going to Ivy League schools. But, you know, this is California and we've got Proposition 13.
Right.
We're going to have to cut to the bone.
Yeah.
We're all going to hurt, but we don't have to suffer.
Yeah.
We just can feel the pain.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Sally and Kokyo. She's pointing to you. He and you're pointing to her. So I'll let you two figure out who wants to. Sally?
So are you saying there's absolutely no point at which you just walk away from the situation?
Oh, heavens, no.
Because, I mean, you know, people have bad relationships.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, if you need to walk away, you walk away. You see, this is the whole thing with this whole, the reality of the absolute doesn't mean that we don't walk through the door. There is both. There are both sides, and they're both true. And in the realm of form and distinction, we make all sorts of decisions. We get mad, we leave things, we leave relationships, we turn away, we, you know, And some of those are very wise actions. Well, you know, part of what they pay me for is my stomach for staying present in the face of challenge. Now, I did fantasize. I could quit at any time. I wouldn't earn any money, but I could quit. I'm not beholden to anyone. I'm self-employed. But that's part of, over the years, I've worked with these people for 20 years off and on. That's part of what they pay me for. And I teach them about that. I teach them about the value of there being somebody who's willing to not turn away and bear witness and stay through it. And it's okay, we're just being human. This is just what it feels like to be people doing a hard thing. So that means a lot to me, right? But that's not to say that there might not be a time when I just say, I'm out of here. I quit. That could happen. That's the thing. I mean, there's no right way. You have to just, it's a continuous, I think, presencing. Just like when we sit, you know, it's a continuous coming back to your own wisdom and compassion as best you can. Well, now what? You know, what does that inner compass say to do right now? Because, of course, we act all the time. We have to act in our world. We're not suspended in, you know, blissful, you know, in a hammock, in the sun, rocking gently forever, you know. And I wish for that. And yet the reality of, you know, children and partners and work, Sangha and friends and enemies, you know, this is the mud that we live in, the fox world, you know. So we do our best with what we have. And we pay attention to what happens. And no, please, yeah, let's.
The unpredictability of cause and effect. Spontaneity, and it seems like I hear that as Wangmo is like, he didn't know that he was going to slap the teacher. He was probably expecting to be slapped.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes. Well, I think that that's part of Baijong's delight, you know, when I think about it, that, you know, I mean, first of all, that come closer, I mean, uh-oh, danger zone, that happened to me. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but I told the story here when I was in Tassajara during my practice period, and we were actually studying this story, and I had, you know, we were doing a lot of speaking in front of the whole community and in the Zendo, and I had said something, and then I was being very eloquent, and I was giving some advice to the Shuso, right, Charlie Pokorny. I was giving him some advice, and Reb said to me, come closer. And I didn't think about it, and I came closer, and he grabbed my arm. Don't you give him advice that you wouldn't take for yourself. Because I had just confessed about my fear, you know. And it was incredible. It was an enlightening, a moment of enlightenment, you know. And I think about that when I think about this story, because, you know, having had that experience, completely total surprise. And yet, I mean, it was a jolt that everybody woke up. We all woke up together with that, you know, generous, radical act. And so I think that, you know, okay, it's time. I think that's, I really appreciate you pointing that out, because that's a kind of a strange part of our practice in a way, but it's, I think, one of the magical, special things, is that there's room for this kind of just completely meeting in the moment, and with a shared commitment to waking up, you know.
That's kind of the cap at the end of the story.
Yeah.
Like, after it all kind of plays out and we learn the lessons from it, then there's this strange thing.
Yeah. And some of the commentators say, you know, he didn't really slap him, you know, and they try to, like, explain it away so we won't think it's too weird, but, you know, whatever. You know, it's just a story. But it, yeah, it's that, wake up right now, you know, and celebrating that together. Thank you all so much for your generous listening and speaking. It's a really beautiful feeling to have the interactivity of practice. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are